Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. An announcement for everyone in Los Angeles is that Rabbi Daniel Landes, the Rosh HaYeshiva of Pardes, will be speaking this Thursday, March 22nd, at 7:45 p.m. at Temple Beth Am, which is on South La Cienega Boulevard in Los Angeles. If you're able to attend the talk, please be sure to introduce yourself to Rabbi Landes and mention that you heard about the shiur through the podcast. The cost for the talk is $18. The address and contact information for the shiur are available on our podcast website, www.podcasts.pardesusa.org. That website address is also on the show notes for this podcast. In this podcast, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Vayikra. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's Parsha is Parshat Vayikra. The topic of our Parsha are the sacrifices. Many people find this week's Parsha very boring, very difficult to relate to, both because of the overall concept of sacrifices, and because of all the technicalities, all the details, which seem to be irrelevant. Today I would like to examine the structure of our parsha, look at some of those details, and hopefully present a number of ideas that will enable people to relate to our parsha. There is a very nice structural division in the parsha along the lines of the chapters. The first chapter discusses korban olah, burnt offerings. The second chapter focuses on korban mincha, meal offerings. The third chapter examines korban shlamim, peace offerings. The fourth chapter looks at sin offerings. And the fifth chapter examines guilt offerings, korban asham. To be more specific, our parsha, which begins with korban olah, focuses on a particular korban olah, a burnt offering, known as olat nedava, a free-willed burnt offering. There are three different types of free-willed burnt offerings. One can bring a bull. One can bring a sheep or a goat. One can bring a bird, turtle doves, pigeons. And the first chapter discusses all the different details of how you offer up each different type of free-willed burnt offering. In the second chapter, we are primarily discussing free-willed meal offerings. And here again, there are a variety of types. There is what is known as minchat solet, where you bring fine flour mixed with oil. In chapter 2, verse 4, ma'afei tanur, where not only do you bring the flour and the oil, but then you bake it in an oven. In verse 5, machavat, you stir fry it. In verse 7, marcheshet, deep fry it. And there's also discussed two types of obligatory meal offerings. In verse 12, it speaks about korban reshit. Korban reshit, which here is the first fruits. In verse 14, it speaks about minchat bikurim, which is a reference to the omer, the offering brought on the second day of Pesach from the new produce. In chapter 3, we discuss peace offerings, voluntary peace offerings. And once again, parallel to the burnt offering, it can be brought from cattle, it can be brought from sheep, from goats. Interestingly, it cannot be brought from birds. In chapter 4, we look at sin offerings. Sin offerings that are clearly obligatory, seeking atonement for a variety of sins. To be more specific, the standard sin offering, which is actually discussed in chapter 4, verse 27, is brought for unintentional sins that were one to have violated them intentionally, the penalty would be karet, to be cut off from the Jewish people. When violated unintentionally, one needs to bring a sin offering. Examples of this would be eating chametz on Pesach. Unintentionally, I didn't realize what I was eating was actually chametz. I thought it was matzah or kosher lePesach. Eating on Yom Kippur. I didn't realize today was Yom Kippur. Or perhaps forgot that I can't eat. Violating Shabbat. Any of the prohibited activities. But in chapter 4, although the general theme is sin offerings for the types of sins I described, there is also a variation depending on who sinned. So that in chapter 4, verse 3, we're told of if the anointed priest, the high priest, were to sin, he brings a special sin offering. In verse 13, what if the community sins based on a mistaken decision by the Beit Din, by the high court? They bring a special sin offering called Par Ha'alem Davar Shel Tzibur, a bull brought because of something that was hidden from the community. Verse 22, what if the prince sins, where the prince is a reference to the king? He brings a different kind of sin offering. And in chapter 5, we discuss in the beginning what's called Korban Olev Yored. Sin offerings where what you bring varies depending on your economic situation. And it is also for very specific types of sins. Withholding testimony. Violating the holiness of the temple by entering it in a state of ritual impurity. Violating an oath or a vow. And the conclusion of chapter 5 is to speak about a guilt offering. And specifically, what's called Asham Gezelot, where one steals and compounds their crime by swearing falsely and then subsequently admits. In such a case, it is not enough to just return the stolen object. One needs to bring a guilt offering for having not only sinned against man, but sinning against God, taking the name of God in vain. Why do we have this structure? So let me begin with the following. The Torah begins by talking about voluntary offerings. Only at the end do we talk about obligatory offerings and specifically sin offerings. Therefore, the first thing to note is that the essential purpose of a korban is related to the root of the word, which means karov, lehit karev, to draw near. The purpose of the korban is to bring one closer to God. And the way to come closer is not necessarily because I have to bring it, but because I want to bring it. So that in an ideal world, the motivation to bring a sacrifice is based on love. And in fact, the first offering which is brought is a korban olah, a burnt offering. What is the meaning of a korban olah? Perhaps the precedent for our parsha is the story of the binding of Isaac in chapter 22 in Bereishit. And although that burnt offering was commanded, in the end, the offering which Abraham brings was actually a free-willed offering. And what do I mean by that? God commanded Abraham to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering. Chapter 22, verse 2 in Bereishit. In the end, after Abraham has brought him to the Temple Mount, has prepared him to be sacrificed, has the knife in his hand and is about to slaughter him, an angel calls out and says to him, "Don't do it." And at that point, Abraham lifts up his eyes and sees a ram. And then he goes, takes the ram, and it says in verse 13, "Vayaalehu la'ola tachet beno." He brings it up as a burnt offering in place of his son. Abraham was not commanded to bring that animal. He did that of his own free will. What is the meaning behind the Korban Ola? Korban Ola symbolizes the readiness of a person to dedicate himself or herself totally to God. Were Abraham to offer up Isaac to God, Abraham is offering everything to God. This is the reason why a burnt offering is totally consumed on the altar. It is a symbolic expression that I am now prepared to devote myself totally to God. To go back to our parsha, someone who voluntarily brings a burnt offering expresses their willingness to devote themselves completely, without reservation, to the will and word of God. In our parsha, the next section, chapter 2, discusses Korban Mincha. The first example of a Korban Mincha is in the book of Bereishit. In fact, it is the first sacrifice that was actually offered. This is Bereishit, chapter 4. Cain, the son of Adam, offers up in chapter 4, verse 3, a mincha to God from the fruits of the ground. And his brother also offers up a mincha. His offering is from the choice flocks, from their fats. From here we see that a mincha is not necessarily a meal offering. In our parsha, it is. In the temple, it is. But conceptually, a korban mincha is an expression by the individual that what I own is God's. All of my possessions belong to God. There is an interesting parallel which we once discussed in the story of Yaakov and Esav. When Jacob comes back after 22 years of exile, having fled from his brother, coming back, married to four women with 12 children, very wealthy, Jacob is interested in becoming reconciled to his brother. And it says in chapter 32, in verse 13, "And Jacob spent the night, and he took from that which was in his hand to be a mincha to Esav, his brother." Jacob wants to express to Esav that whatever he has is his brother's, so that his brother should not be jealous of him. With a korban ola, we express that we dedicate ourselves to God, are prepared to have a relationship with God, where nothing is held back. Korban Mincha expresses that we acknowledge our possessions are the gift of God by giving back to God, on a token, symbolic level, what God has given to us. And then chapter 3, Korban Shlamim, a peace offering. In the case of a Korban Olah, the offering is totally burnt on the altar. In the situation of a mincha, a handful is separated, burnt on the altar. The rest is eaten by the priests. In a Korban Shlamim, the bulk of the sacrifice is eaten by the person who brings it. The meaning behind the Korban Shlamim is that I try to elevate my material existence. I take a routine act of eating and make it into a holy act by bringing this as a sacrifice, by eating before God. But there is another aspect to a Korban Shlamim, equally important. A Korban Shlamim cannot be totally consumed by the person who brings it. If it is to be consumed and not left over, you need to have people join you. So that the basic purpose of a Korban Shlamim is to build a community, to bring people together through eating into a relationship with each other and with God. So that if I take the first three chapters of our parsha, which speak primarily about voluntary offerings, the point of the sacrifices is an expression of the individual, of their aspirations, of their vision, of their desire to come closer to God and to community, to sanctify their daily life. It is only when we get to chapter 5 and chapter 6, chapter 4 and chapter 5, that we discuss the obligatory sin offerings. Offerings that are brought when there's been a breakdown, when there's a need to repair. So that looking at our parsha, according to the Pshat, ideally, sacrifices should be brought as voluntary offerings. But when there's been a breakdown, there is a way to repair. And that is what we have in the sin and guilt offerings. If we go to the drash level, it is interesting how the ethical dimensions of the sacrifice become highlighted. I want to take two examples. In chapter 1, verse 2, it says, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, Adam ki akriv mikem korban lashem. God says to Moses to speak to the Jewish people and say to them, a person, if he shall offer from you a sacrifice to God. And the rabbis are troubled by the language. Why does it say, Adam ki akriv mikem? Why doesn't it say, what would be a much more typical expression, ki takrivu, when you offer up a sacrifice? What is this idea of Adam? And Rashi quotes the Midrashic comment which says, why does it say Adam? This is an allusion to the first Adam, to Adam. And it comes to teach us, just as Adam did not offer up sacrifices to God from that which was stolen, because in fact everything belonged to him, so too, you do not offer sacrifices from that which is stolen. So that the rabbis already see, through this subtle hint in the text, that sacrifices cannot be a substitute, cannot be a cover-up for ethical behavior. On the contrary, sacrifices must be based on ethical behavior. One cannot steal and then ease their conscience by bringing a sacrifice. The sacrifice must be totally free of any semblance of theft. And this becomes expressed in another detail. One of the burnt offerings I mentioned is a bird sacrifice. And on verse 16, chapter 1, verse 16, it says that when this bird is offered up on the altar, before it is burned, ve'hesir et murato, you have to remove its stomach, its insides, and throw them away. They can't be burned on the altar. And Rashi once again quotes a rabbinic comment which says, since birds are fed from theft, it says that you should throw their insides, which fed themselves from theft. Birds go eating everywhere. They don't ask permission to eat from anyone. They don't eat what belongs to them. By saying that you throw their stomach, their intestines, away from the altar, once again we have a detail which shows that there is no place for theft or anything that is in any way connected to theft on the altar of God. And perhaps I will end with the last thing, which I think is the pshat, the last section of our parsha, which speaks about a guilt offering that's brought because of theft. There are five guilt offerings, and one of them is for theft. In numerous places, the rabbis see theft as something that can totally unravel a society, as something which is pernicious, as something which people find it very difficult to control. The tremendous temptation to steal because of the perniciousness of this crime. There is the need to have special atonement. But special atonement in a particular situation where not only does the person steal, but then takes an oath in the name of God to legitimate it. What this shows us is the problematic of people who not only engage in unethical behavior, but then somehow use religion to justify it, to allow it, to legitimate it. When such a thing happens, the person needs to bring a guilt offering, but only when they acknowledge what the severity of what they've done wrong. If they're not willing to acknowledge it, if they don't confess their sin, they cannot bring a sacrifice. The sacrifice is a corrective, but it can be a corrective only for those people who recognize their sin. What I have attempted to do is to show how the structure and the details of our parsha try to use the sacrifices to instruct us in how we should be relating to God and to people. The idea of being totally committed to God, the acknowledgement of how all of what we own is a gift of God that we should somehow give back to God. How we should try to build community, but build community around a framework of holiness. And last but not least, how all of our religious, spiritual aspirations, expressions, must be grounded in ethical behavior. Many people see the prophets as emphasizing ethics at the expense of sacrifices. This is an incorrect view. The prophets were not against sacrifices. The prophets were against hypocrisy, against those people who thought that their religious activity could be a substitute for ethical behavior. Even worse, that their religious activity could give them a license to engage in unethical behavior. There is no dichotomy here between sacrifices and ethics. On the contrary, there is a symbiotic relationship. Sacrifices complement ethical behavior. Ethical behavior should be a natural outgrowth from sacrifices. May we be able to examine the details of our parsha and other parshiot, which seem to be very removed from our reality, but nevertheless may be reflecting concepts that are all too real, even in a modern day context. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. As I mentioned at the start, please see www.podcasts.pardesusa.org for more information about Rabbi Daniel Landy's talk this coming Thursday evening. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.